for us to feel everybody be more informed. So what is your criteria as far as timing? You're trying to get her done by 5, or what are you shooting for on this one, Ryan?
Oh, for this meeting?
Yeah.
I think that's a great target.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a lot to go through, so
Yeah.
I'll go ahead and get into it. Is that the time
Start it up.
you're shooting for, or is there flexibility to go later if needed?
My flexibility is good, but I don't know anybody else's.
I'm flexible for a little bit after as well.
Great. Well, let's get into it. I'll show the agenda, which kind of shows what we plan to cover
Perfect.
this meeting, just as a high level overview. So, you guys see my screen?
Yep, thank you.
Agenda? Okay. So then sec so we'll review, discuss, refine DMP draft section 3, system description. We'll cover the step collection system, how it works. There's a lot of sub points under that. System ownership and responsibility, who owns what, who's supposed to maintain what. Also, we'll look at draft section 9, which covers annexation and growth. Starts to lay out the concepts for mainline extensions, minimum service and screening criteria, mainline extensions by property owners and developers, board decision framework and documentation, and then future policies to be developed. So, given that, let's pull this one up. Oh, wait, it's not there. Here we go. Did everyone have a chance to review this thrilling document?
I've gone through it in brief, but I can't say that I am in detail.
Okay. So first, we just wanted to describe, how a step system functions and really lay it out for anyone who might read this, and how it functions differently than a gravity system, particularly how, the sludge and scum is captured in the tanks for primary treatment, liquid portions pumped out. And so some of this you guys probably all understand pretty well by now, but just wanted to get this description in there.
I think it's appropriate.
Lay out on-site subcomponents. The public is still asking questions about this, so I thought this would be good to lay out, the components that are included in the on-site system. So the way we broke down this chapter is we cover on-site step components and describe how that's supposed to function. And then on private, so yeah, then service connection, and we kind of work down the line. Then to
Okay.
public step collection system, which is where you've got the T's and the branches and services in Terrebonne. And then the transmission main is kind of a separate component of the system. And then the City of Redmond discharge point. So kind of five categories of the system. Arguably, the connection point could be a different thing, but it kind of serves as the dividing line between the private and the public portion. So, and the, it's got some of these components here, that are part of the connection, the service connection. So, five main things there. Jonathan, a question I have for you is that I'm seeing in a lot of documentation, and maybe even in the DEQ step steg manual, that for retrofits, they call for a separate dosing tank, not for inserting ProPak in the existing tank. Is that, and I've heard you recommend a dosing tank as well. Is that?
I think that was just existing practice. I can't say for sure that's a rule that you have to go by.
Okay.
I don't see really unless you're trying to do a quick retrofit where you're not pumping and examining tanks, then I see a dosing chamber after the tank works really well. But if your plan is to actually get a vet of each tank, so pump it out and then make sure it's adequate, then then I don't see a reason why you wouldn't just go with the component in that tank instead of the extra discharge portion.
Okay.
But either way, it could work.
Compartment make a difference, whether it's a single compartment or a dual compartment?
You're going to have a little bit more maintenance on the filter potentially if you do not have a dual compartment tank. But as far as functionality, not too much.
Okay.
So question that's been bothering me a little bit, but I'm trying to make sure I understand it more clearly here, is at the moment we're deciding that we're owning the pump and basically taking it from there. Is that the way I interpret it? As far as the sanitary district's responsibility?
The pump, that's an interesting one, because you could have them install the components on their property to the district standards, and then the district is responsible for then maintaining them. But it, say if a pump goes out and the district replaces it, do you then bill the customer, or is that then just on the district as a maintenance item?
Yeah, so kind of along Guy's observation about the duties, you know, or the kind of the purpose of our situation, which is to just accept effluent from private properties and move it to Redmond and get rid of the effluent. What's the benefit to us, or why is it that we want to be tied into all the different potential situations that might arrive on each property? And why wouldn't we just say that they need to do it to whatever our standard shows here, hire whomever they want to do it. And if their plug, if their system plugs up, it's not on us, it's on them to clean that out. Do we stand the chance of getting, you know, a worse grade of effluent in our lines and thereby causing us more grief? Or what's the concept there? Why wouldn't we just say, it's ours, soon as it comes into our line at the property line. Other than that, you know, here's how we want to say.
I think I can speak a little bit into that, because I've seen it done pretty much every way. You know, I think the sewer rate should reflect however which way you do it. Some communities like, you know, if they're accustomed to paying a $90 a month sewer bill, and gravity sewer systems where it's, you know, there's no items for them to maintain, they pay that monthly bill. If an issue happens, I mean, you still do have, if it's between your pipe and the city connection, if there's a clog, it's on you. But for the most part, you're taken care of, and that's adjusted in the sewer rate. You know, there's some culprits that spend more money, and then there's some people that don't use as much, but they pay into the community system. The other way could be what you're describing, you know, where you're just giving them effluent, and then that could simply be reflected in what Redmond is tolling you for that effluent, and whatever, you know, I guess Ryan's team deems would be good R&R for the transmission main. So I would imagine that sewer bill would be less. The people have to take ownership. The only downside I could see of that is if you get to a point where the whole community just can't afford their own upkeep of components. You know, they didn't save for a $700 pump. Now that happens, now there's just nuisance properties in your system. But it wouldn't be too much different than septic systems that they exist today and how that's approached. But that would be my, you know, that would kind of be my two sides of the coin on how you could do it. But it really just depends on what the rate is and how that is seen. You know, I think it would be a lot cheaper if on the larger monthly bills where it's fully maintained, they handle the pump outs as well. So that's all associated into the sewer bill.
And I can understand that, but I just don't understand why we want that on our responsibility.
No, and I don't know if you necessarily do. And the pump outs, you know, even if you went that route, you could probably have something that if it If it happens more frequently than every 3 years, it's on the owner or something, or every 5 years. But really, I guess those are just my thoughts on it. I'm kind of indifferent on how it would be done.
Do you see any hybrid situations of this, like where maybe you have a subscription program where some people get their system maintained by, the district under a certain contract, and other people do their own
I
maintenance?
have not, and I wish I knew a little bit more on the nuances of what regulation allows. It's a lot more flexible and not as flexible in different areas, but I don't see that not working. If you had certain developments where they just don't want to see it, they don't want to be bothered by it, and it's just a subscription that they pay monthly and everything's handled. And then other people in the country, you may already have your septic tank, you've already very accustomed to zero sewer bill. Maybe that's a bit more approachable manner of doing it in different areas.
I guess the other question I have
Or
is just the,
commercial as well. If
yeah,
it's a commercial
commercial, yeah.
application, maybe they pay a higher rate, but they're covered, and then the city municipal workers know how to deal with those systems.
The other question I had is like, if we are responsible and like, let's say something goes wrong with the pump that we're maintaining and they have a backup into their house and it ruins their floors, and like, who's responsible for that then? I would assume it would be the district.
I don't know why it would be if there says, oh, you mean if we were
If we're
responsible for the pump?
responsible for the pumps
Yeah,
and there was a
definitely.
problem. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Can you guys hear me? This guy.
Yep.
I see some real problems with access.
Right.
And, people are touchy about you coming into the yard. I'm a landlord, and even just renting, but ownership, they put a fence up, they have a dog, you're entering their property. Even if you have an easement, I think that's just going to be a rub with people. Like, oh, I'm here to maintain. Well, you didn't give me access, and why are you here? And I'm kind of in favor of the point of ownership. The one picture that's in the diagram there, there's Schedule 80 ball valve, I believe. And that's where we take ownership of it. And I think that and to talk about that tank, when I Jonathan, when I talked to Deschutes County Environmental Health, there's a process that you have to go through to certify the tank before they'll let us reuse an existing tank. And
So is there a liability, not a liability, or a concern for us relative to a tank that's poorly maintained, tank and pump system, contributing something to our line, which is going to cause us issues, i.e. cleaning or whatever? Or is it going to be that the tank just doesn't, tank slash pump situation just does not function if it's not functioning the way we want it to function? Does that make sense?
yeah, you can go ahead, Jonathan. My thought is they might have issues on site and just take out the effluent filter because it's getting in their way or it's slowing things down, and then they're starting to blow junk into the system. And or if they don't pump it enough, then they'll start blowing fog and or sludge through whatever can fit through that effluent screen. What have you seen, Jonathan, in places where on-site tanks aren't maintained properly? I think you're on mute now if you're trying to talk, but you can join us later too. Yeah.
There you
Yeah.
I apologize. So I don't think I've ever seen that issue. The removing the effluent screen, I've never come across that. But not to say it hasn't been done and it just isn't a big enough culprit to cause any issues. Those screens, as long as they stay in place, they do a really, really good job of preventing anything over an eighth an inch going into your guys' collection lines. I don't see really that being an issue as far as pump outs, they're just going to back up their own system and eventually need to pump their own stuff out and get everything cleaned out. But removing the filter, I don't really have an answer for that. If someone really wanted to be that negative to you guys, it technically could. But it's a liquid handling pump, so you're only going to suck up so much solids before that liquid's handling pump, really doesn't do a great job any longer.
Okay.
So if, let's say whoever's maintaining the pump, how frequently is that pump maintained? Is that a biannual thing, an annual thing, an every couple year thing?
Oh, no.
Schedule on that.
If it was my personal tank, I'd be comfortable taking a look every 3 to 5 years of just, looking at the biotube filter.
On the pump itself?
No, on the system. The pump itself, you're talking 15, 20 years. It's a very long term item.
But you don't think you do some maintenance on it though, intermittently, because we're talking about the maintenance of it.
You really, unless you're seeing any issues, you don't even need to pull it out. But to pull this pump out is pretty easy. You just grab a hook and pull up. So if you wanted to, you could pull the pump out and make sure the tiny little screen on it has no extreme obstructions, but removing the pump isn't even an annual item. It's mostly what we will do on a annual. I can't even say that because no one really does annuals. Most systems in this capacity are checked about every 5 years or so, and then any other time they're seeing a tank is when an alarm goes off, and that's usually a float has failed or something of that matter.
So maybe then the customer just gives a certification every 5 years or whatever time period we think it needs to be like, oh, my tank was checked and it was great, or my pump was checked and it's good. Or
that's a really good idea. And they could come out there and they use what's called a sludge judge, and it actually gives you a inch measurement of the three basically
layers,
the scum, the layers that form inside of a tank. So you can get I'm pretty sure it's already written and you wouldn't even need to reinvent the wheel, but there's probably a code value that judge gives to tell you your tank needs to be pumped.
And that could just be a piece of paperwork that they're turning in every 3 years or 5 years or whatever, but it's definitely, grandma and grandpa out there that are on a tank that, shower once or twice a week type thing versus, mom and dad with the five school kids that are just, it's a whole lot of different service needs and stuff there.
And some people might be handy enough to where it's easy enough for them to go check their floats and
it's nice to give work potential opportunities to the septic suppliers around or septic maintenance people around here, as opposed to having a specific one that works for us and does our things. If they just did people's and then
that's done a lot of the times where multiple service providers understand this technology is coming into the area. They get up to speed and they provide their service. But really, it's not too much different than what people are already dealing with in day to day life that own septic systems. Except for this time, your septic system actually has an alarm on it and lets you know it gets full. So there's, it's not.
Many people have ATDs already.
Pardon? Right?
Many people already have ATDs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing too is if the district's concerned about a system failing and everybody has an alarm, can that alarm remotely contact the district also? So we know.
Not at this point on this part. No, not at the municipal level. We have a few guinea pigs where there's fiber optic at each house, and that we're working towards that solution. But no, it's not an economical solution at this point. It's pretty much just a blaring alarm at your individual panel, and then When you open up the panel or on the panel, there's a service provider or the municipality's number to call. And then you
Okay.
can press a button and silence it. And then
Oh.
if it doesn't get service, it's either 24 or 48 hours, or that alarm triggers again. Then the alarm will go back on.
So you can't really ignore it, which is good.
Not too much. You can periodically, but it will come back on.
And what's the reserve storage typically, Jonathan? Is it 1 or 2 days of flow?
It's usually 2 days. I want to say the 1,000 gallon has like a 200 gallon volume, and then the 1,500 gallon has 300 or 400 gallons of emergency volume, which for 2 days, that's based off of kind of a lot of flow. When you don't have power, I would imagine 200 gallons goes further than 2 days.
Yeah.
That example you gave of Lacey, Ryan, it
Yeah.
if you read the example, it they require you to build in I think it's a 24-hour minimum reserve. It might be 48. I read that in there. If you look at Lacey's requirement for the septic tanks, it's in there. And
Oh, that they go straight up to a 1500? They don't even deal with 1000? Is that what you're saying?
no, I'm saying that they require you to build in a capacity for it to shut down. I don't know. I read through a bunch of that stuff, so I don't remember which example it was, but that was one of them. And I have a similar pump that handles nine of the manufactured homes out of my park. And I think maybe I've changed the pump once in 30 years, and it really requires zero maintenance. I don't do anything to it. It's the pump is in a separate tank, and it's just it flows from the and then it pumps it over to the leach lines, but it's been virtually problem free.
So it's mostly the scum, sludge, and floats, right, Jonathan, that people have to maintain.
The one that's guaranteed is eventually you just have to pump the tank, but it's on average around 6.5 years or so on the ones I've been a part of. And then the floats, 5 to 10 years, maybe a float will fail. So those are probably your most frequent maintenance items.
Yeah, the
I mean,
only problem I
oftentimes,
ever.
even on the maintenance for some of these bigger ones, is just every 6.5 years they come out, they pump the tank, they wash that effluent filter back off into the tank before they pump it, and then that's about it. And then the reactive maintenances are even less frequent, and that's for the most part a float.
Right. And you mentioned the ATT systems, Ryan, and if you have an ATT system, you're required to service it once a year and certify that with the county. So you have to get a certified person out to check it, make sure it's working properly.
Anyways, yeah, so they just keep going with that.
Yeah, and I think we would have a lot less problems if. Well, if they have to put a new tank in, it's a 1500 two compartment tank, or if we're going to reuse it to have the tank outside the existing tank because it has to go up through that baffle and you're basically just pumping water.
With a separate tank, pump tank.
Well, yeah, there's no way the scum and the sludge doesn't get it over to the second tank. Isn't that correct, Jonathan?
That is correct. I mean, you're the baffle wall kind of does that same thing where they'll put the flow through port at the middle of the tank. And then two tanks is in a sense doing that same thing where they'll have, a drop down into the outlet of the one tank that goes about mid-level of the tank. So we're pulling water from that mid-level and then it flows gravity into that second tank. So it just kind of helps clear up the water as it moves through these different chambers before it gets to that pump and the filter. But in all honesty, you know, a lot of these systems out there are single chamber tanks with just that filter, and they still do pretty well. So I wouldn't be too stuck on it needing to be two chamber for existing tanks or anything like that. But for future on, you're going to have less maintenance if you have a two chamber or, you know, some configuration of that sort.
Unless it's the Prelos, which has two chambers.
It technically is two chambers. Yep. And that one's especially good just because it actually is round. So you're flowing a lot longer before you get to where the filter's at.
Huh. Okay. Why did Lacey and Clark not use Prelos for the new tank? They're still showing kind of concrete
with that type of configurations. Yeah.
Huh?
It'll be better with the Prelos than with like a concrete shorter packs.
Yeah, I was just surprised they didn't include the Prelos off the shelf. Is that because they didn't want to have a proprietary spec? I mean, they have proprietary specs for the discharge assembly and the Pro Pack, but not the tank.
For where?
So, is my screen still showing?
Yeah.
Yes.
Like for City of Lacey or Clark Regional Wastewater District, they're showing Pro Packs in fiberglass or concrete tanks. They're not showing the Prelo.
Yeah, this probably, I don't know if this is the most recent one because the new Lacey one shows the Prelos in there.
Oh, really?
But they have and they have a few configurations. I think right now Lacey has a raw tank, which is a fiberglass, smaller, like pill-shaped tank, and then the Prelos. And then any lot that is large enough will get the Prelos unit, but they have a few really, really small postage stamp lots where the right-of-ways are so small they can't get the round because it's a 10-foot excavation hole, so they end up in people's right-of-way with a larger tank.
Well, it's probably good to give them an option then. You know, the Prelos, if you can do it, great, but otherwise... you can slip it in. I don't know. If we want to offer 1,000 gallon as an option, it would be a smaller footprint. But I'm starting to see now that maybe their idea is if you're going to do a new one, make it two compartment, and so the 15,000 gives you 1,000 of primary treatment. Essentially, it's like a septic tank and a pump vault in one. Structure, right?
Right.
So maybe that's why they're going a little oversized on the tank volume because they're pumping out this, you know, the back half of it.
The tank size is mandated by the county / DEQ, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So in instances such as Guy's or Kristen's or the supermarket or, you know, the Mexican food place or whatever it is downtown, a lot of these guys already have systems in with pumps and tanks. And so in my mind, at least, our job is just to take their effluent. And so how they process it on their property, as long as they're pumping effluent into our system, I'm not sure I care.
Huh, yeah.
I mean, tell me why I should.
That's a good point. I mean, you're replacing their drain field.
Yes.
The only thing I would be considerate about is the quality of tank that you get. You don't want a bunch of leaky tanks. Kind of defeats the purpose down the road. But I'm with you. Give them the.
I agree, but isn't that a county issue?
It is a county issue. I talked to the county about that, and there's going to be a permit required. I forwarded that information to Ryan. And it's a little unclear exactly how that's going to work.
Yeah.
But Todd Cleveland said, and I talked to, the reason I talked to him, I talked to him about mine. And so you have to have it's a little confusing in the wording, but it's called a system tank abandonment. And during that process, they evaluate whether or not the tank is suitable for reuse.
Okay.
There it is.
And
I'll
that's
pull it up.
county deal.
So, I would have to have somebody like Abe Jones come out, pump the tank down, go inside the tank, and either certify it that that tank is still structurally sound, or if not, it'll have to be changed. And then he recommended that we have a also a specification, like a for the residential, if it's say older than 25 or 30 years or whatever, we decide that we require it be changed, right?
So
I think it'd be
that's just Todd Cleveland's statement you're saying?
I'm saying Todd Cleveland, yes.
So why do we care? If the county's already overseeing it and we are just taking their effluent, why is it our job to enforce slash monitor any of that stuff?
Well, we're going to have to come up with a process for them to hook up, and that process is going to include certification, it's like, say if I want to hook up, then I have to get through, we're going to have a process that says, okay, Rustic Ranch Mobile Home Park is going to have to go through. The first step is the evaluation of your existing, and if the county does not believe that your existing is proper, then and then we have to make sure that the pumps are sized
Why do we have to do that?
well, because if they're not sized properly, it's in my understanding, and Jonathan and I talked to him briefly about this. There's some pressure in the pipe, and the pressure of the tank or the pump has to be able to keep that flow going. So the system works right.
Well, so the pump has to overcome whatever head is necessary to put it into the system. And I don't know if there is a volume flow rate that we're dealing with that we're concerned with, like meaning you couldn't just, put 1,000 gallons in 20 minutes.
That could be a problem. Too
Okay.
much flow could be a problem.
It's gonna be an extremely standard pump for residential,
Right.
10 gallons per minute, half horsepower. I mean,
Right.
really, unless there's somebody in a canyon pushing over 120 feet of elevation, give or take. I'm just doing some brainstorm counts. Then it will all be that uniform pump. And then really, I mean, in the end, if the homeowner picked the wrong pump, their system wouldn't pump into the community collection. They'd have to get a new pump. But I don't know if that needs to be on you guys to cover every case by case basis. I've seen it done, but you might be right on that. And I'm kind of brainstorming here, but maybe there's a way where the installers are trained on selecting certain pumps,
Yeah.
or they're reputable installers.
Yeah.
We just give them the criteria. They figure out which pump meets that criteria.
Yeah. There could be some nuances, for different parts of the system where they are pushing against a greater system pressure.
Yeah,
Like
that'll
folks
cover
on
that.
19th or on first on the east end, they're going to
Yeah.
have more head pressure to push against. So they might want a 3/4 horse pump. For example, those can handle well over 200. But up top, they're probably all fine with the half horse. So there's some nuances there that maybe we could have as the sizing guide. But I mean, maybe this is kind of an interesting thought to shift more of the installation and maintenance responsibilities for on-site stuff.
Yeah, we want to do as little as possible. Then we don't have to have a person running around checking tanks and doing all that stuff. We
Well, the
don't
thing
need
about
them.
tanks is currently the county cares because they are the legally authorized agent of DEQ to make sure that pollution is not going into the ground. And so that's why tanks have to be properly sized. That's why they care that they're sized properly so they get enough primary treatment before it goes in the
Does
ground.
that change when we take over the system?
That's a good question.
I don't, well, if we're not, I don't think so, Tim. If their tank fails, whether it goes into a drain field or into our effluent system, then you have a problem.
Yeah, you meaning the property owner.
And the county.
Oh, with like because of a leaky tank, you're saying.
Yeah, a leaky
Right.
tank.
But
And so they're still going to have governance over that tank.
the county is.
The county.
So Terrebonne Sanitary District need not get involved in that, in my opinion.
That's fine with me.
I mean, it seems to me like everybody has to, whether or not they're getting new tanks or old tanks, they just need to be watertight and they need to be checked before they connect to the system. And whether
Yeah, I
it's
think
the,
that'd be easier.
and there could be cases where people have 30-year-old tanks that are working fine, and I don't see why they should replace a tank that's working fine if they get it certified.
Yeah, and I think the
Well,
guy
yeah,
was saying that was part of
right.
that plan or that
Yeah,
process.
and that's what Todd was saying, that that's in that abandonment permit that's going to be required before they can hook up.
So I guess in short, it feels to me like it would be a lot better for the Terrebonne Sanitary District and probably people in general to give them the capacity to be able to hire, any of the dozen septic operators in the area to put in a tank that meets this criteria and manages it and deal with it. And we, as soon as they decide they want to start pumping into our system, that's when the billing starts. And when the alarm goes off, there's a tag on their little door that says, call Abe's Septic or whoever it says to call. And they call and they say, my alarm's going off, and Terrebonne Sanitary District doesn't know anything about it. Don't have to deal with it.
That sounds like a much easier way to run your
Well, it might also be different for new construction versus existing, too.
Explain that to me. Why would you think that?
I mean, people might just be more interested in like putting in what you're asking for to begin with. So it might
Sure.
just be easier. But as far as people that already exist, it might be difficult for them to get rid of everything and put in all new stuff if everything is kind of working.
Right. I mean, just like Mike Moore's saying or whatever, the Terrebonne Estates. All we want to really do is have him put in whatever pumps he needs to flip it into go into an R pipe, and we'll bill him appropriately, whatever that is. I
Yeah.
don't know what that is right off, but
When I would
and
imagine tank size for different commercial applications is going to vary significantly depending on what you're doing, and it's probably going to be specific for each site
yeah,
based on flow.
I have a tool for that. It's the guidance from OARs. And the DEQ STEP/STEG guidance doc is twice the peak daily flow.
That's kind of what it is for your septic system already, I think, for a lot
Yeah.
of the commercial properties. So,
So I've started to create this table based on so Jonathan, this is kind of my first attempt at that project I mentioned to you, or the task of estimating EDU. Well, this also could serve for EDU assessments and EDU calculations for specific establishments based on DEQ's sewage flow numbers. And so they've put out these numbers, per unit, per person, per bedroom, per seat, whatever, for different stuff, like a church of 150, 5 gallons per minute per day per person. So anyways, that it goes up. There's minimums for each establishment. And then the volume, the tankage, this is what I'm getting at. It's this is 2 times the calculated peak design flow, right? So in the case of a 2-bedroom house, the minimum for the establishment is 450. So then your minimum is Oh, either 1,000 gallons as a very bottom minimum or double. So double the daily peak daily flow or 1,000, whichever is
Do
greater.
we, is it our understanding that the county will still continue to enforce those things, or has that become our responsibility in some fashion?
The county usually enforces those things.
Well, for
Even
on-site
where.
septic permits, but there may be a legal shift of responsibility that this may be a good question for Eileen, honestly,
Yeah, I
is
don't know.
does the sanitary district take on the responsibilities of adherence to DEQ standards within the district? Maybe a sense kind of replacing the role of the county.
Right, that's my question.
Well, at some point, this contraption, whatever it looks like, is going to have to be inspected by somebody. And I would imagine that's going to have to be inspected by the county, correct? Because who else is going
As
to
a plumbing
inspect?
permit, yeah.
I
Yeah, that's kind of
mean,
what I'm
yeah,
thinking.
they're going to have to. Well, there's electrical work, so there has to be electrical inspection. There's plumbing work, so there
Yeah.
has to be plumbing. And so who's going to inspect that? I get, don't know. We can contact the county to find out.
Plumbing department or the
That
building
would seem
department
like it
for
would be the
plumbing and
county. I
plumbing.
mean, just like if it's a water system, the water company gives you the water, but you gotta get the county to inspect it on the property.
Right, yeah. So, what we'll have to do is design a step by step. This is what you need to do, right? So they know, and then before they hook up, then all those things have to be completed.
Well, Jonathan's in an area of bad reception, it looked like, so I'm not sure if he was signing off or just letting us know that, but
So this raises a question: to what extent would will the county and or the district inspect the stat on site? Through these permits.
yeah.
Well, I think it's gonna, we're gonna want to make sure that, to answer Tim's question, that it's done properly. So there, we see the tanks in, the pumps are in, the screen is in, and the proper equipment, the material was used. I think we want to see that, and so. We're getting the cleanest effluent we can get. So we
When I say
may.
that, you mean the county can see it? We'll trust the county? Is that what you mean? Or you think we want to see it as the district?
I think as a district, we probably want, we would want to at least inspect it to just make sure that, look, you're doing this right. You're doing it how our specifications are. And you still have to maintain and repair it, but we want to make sure that you did it. That would be my thought. And with the understanding, if we go with that, connection point, from that point it's ours, which seems perfectly reasonable to me because, I'm thinking, I get my tanks pumped probably a little more frequently than other people, but I don't want to have a problem.
Right.
And, that's just the way it works.
Yeah, well, maintenance is a separate section. That's the next chapter. So we will get more into this operations and maintenance framework, the O&M model. Haven't even gotten there, but this is really good. This, so
You
maybe
did
what
have
we
a matrix on there, Ryan, where owner provides that you're going down and showed the parts and you go across.
this one, yeah.
Yeah, that and that shows whose responsibility, who does it. So that was already in part of this.
Yeah.
See, I did do a little homework.
It's true.
Good job, guy.
Excellent. Yeah, that's right. We do kind of, as it relates to the system, assign each part to the district or property owner. Is this, were there any comments with this breakdown or concerns, or was this, I know it's a lot of words to look at, but.
I have not seen through it. I have not looked through
Well, that some of it shows property owner unless provided by policy, financing, and program. So we haven't made that a definitive line yet,
Yeah.
right? So, but this is a good matrix that you created. It just we have to decide. I
Who
guess
does
it's up
what?
to the board and how that's going to work.
Yeah, and we can I can make this a little more what color do you guys want as the district? You want to be green or blue
I
or
think we ought to
orange?
appropriately be green, wouldn't
Green. Okay, then the homeowner, let's do like orange or something or blue. Let's do blue. So there's some though that are maybe unclear. So like in this case this is and then the other city of Redmond, we'll make them red because that's their logo. So this is all district. This is a little bit of a gray area, a pressure service line private side. So that's upstream of the check valve. That's a gray area. Maybe that's TBD in terms of who owns that. This is all kind of TBD also, like Guy pointed out, we're saying typically the owner, but the district may be involved, or otherwise it's the owner. So the tank, effluent filter, effluent pump, those are things to ponder, and we can research more while preparing the next chapter. And it might come clearer, especially as we meet with Keith Bedell next month. We can come back to this and clarify which one it is.
Yeah, I think this is a really helpful chart for whoever, because it's like, okay, this is my, it's really delineates who takes care of what and who's responsible for it.
I'm glad you like it. Cool. Great feedback, everyone. Thank you. I'm glad I appreciate that you all read or you read enough to for us to have a good review here. We got about 10 more minutes. There's more. Were there any with the time we have, anything that seemed missing or out of place in this section? Again, we covered on-site service connection as the dividing line of ownership and install. Public step collection system, describing the parts and pieces. Looks like Jonathan left. There's pig launches are sometimes a thing, but I
We
hear
need to
from,
think about that.
huh?
I think we need to consider the big launch thing. I think I've mentioned before, but
I have, we have, we've had some meetings with folks. We've even drawn up a detail for a pig launch and retrieval, but I keep seeing in step related documentation that pigging is very rarely ever needed
okay.
because it's such clear liquid. There are so few solids and fog in there. The biggest thing is to just make sure the pipes are clear after construction because you can get debris in there from that. So, that might just be pulling the mandrel to sweep it out.
I mean, that really does pretty much the same thing.
So, that's questionable. I mean, one thought, which I mentioned in here, ice pigging. I don't know if you guys have heard about ice pigging. Imagine a giant slushy machine that connects to the system and injects this slush. It's like s sliced ice, and it then moves as a plug through the sewer system and scours the pipe as it goes. And so then it melts eventually, and you don't need to worry about something being stuck in the main or having to have special appurtenances to insert this block of the squeegee device. So that's another option if there if pigging was needed. You could go through one of the ARBs and insert the slushie. There's some cool YouTube videos on it if you're really intrigued for more. But I also updated the collection system map
Nice.
to show that with the changes around the school and the water district and sizing, just to kind of give a bigger picture of the collection system. You know, and many people will sometimes say, well, aren't you going to serve? Aren't you going to provide piping to the other parts of the district? Yes, we have a plan to reach everybody. You know, it's not all about, it's not just about phase A. So this shows that foresight. This one gets kind of technical, but I think it's maybe worth explaining just the dynamics of the system. Sorry, it's so small. It might or might not be useful at this scale, but the point is that the level, the water level in the main, it'll level out to the discharge elevation. So it'll match the discharge manhole of the city of Redmond when there is not flow.
Which
So
is the
then when
far
there,
left.
huh?
Which is the far left, right?
Yes, right here. This is the discharge elevation. The w static water levels here when there's no flow, it's 1 in the morning, 2 in the morning. That's where it is. Then the 6 and 7 a.m. showers hit, and then this line will increase up the slope of the hill, and that elevation difference is what will then push it through. When flow's really going, then the hydraulic grade line, which is basically where the surface water wants to be, the water surface wants to be, because of the friction loss pushing back on the flow. When it's above the ground level, then that's the pressure that is felt in the pipe. And so the point I'm trying to illustrate here is that at the top, you know, around the water district building and the school and all that, it's the pressure is going to be most of the time zero or near zero. And then when there is peak flow at 550 GPM, which is like 55 pumps being on at once, the exact same time, then it's above ground and it's maybe 20 feet ahead. You know, so that's just the kind of dynamic. And then so this line will be filling and draining throughout the course of the day of time. And in most operation, I wouldn't expect it to even reach the top of the hill in terms of the water surface, you know, becoming a full pipe flow. So yeah, it'll kind of fill up this main line on the slope and then push through. So
What we want to be make sure we're especially cautious of is that anybody that lives below that blue line has the appropriate checks so
yes.
water does not go into their house or
Yes.
effluent.
So they are always under pressure. This is roughly 19th Street. So, and that's not abnormal. I mean, some in many
Correct.
systems, that's how it is. They're the low parts are always under pressure. This is 60 feet ahead. And so that is what, 20, 30, 25 PSI roughly.
Pretty close.
Not an extreme amount of pressure. But you know, then when there's a lot of pumps in the system, the elevation, the difference here between the ground level or the pipe level and this hydraulic grade line, that's how many feet of TDH they're then pumping against, right? So they might need a pump, a higher horse pump, for example. We talked about this a bit earlier. So I just kind of wanted to illustrate the system dynamics a little more here. Any questions on that? Because of these dynamics, step pumps will operate against different pressure ranges based on the elevation and location in the collection system. So that might end up looking like a zone map, or we
Right,
say
that's what I was just going to say.
within these areas, based on the length of pipe they have to push through and the elevation they are at, they might need different pumps. And we could just make a residential basis for that, and then you know, commercial will be a case by case. And then City of Redmond, just describe how that works, what it's for how it's supposed to function. So then, yeah, we talked a lot about system responsibility. One example that I saw that was kind of interesting is there's a bill of sale that I don't know if it's City of Lacey or Clark that either they sell the components to the property owner to make sure they get all the right stuff, and then maybe they can buy it in bulk and save customers money that way, and it just makes it simpler in some ways off the shelf for people to get stuff from the district. Or if it was that they need to get all the parts and then they sell it to the district to then maintain it. I'm not sure which way it goes, but they had a bill of sale document, which I thought was interesting.
I don't know which it is or what it is either, but it strikes me that it's most likely the district relinquishing responsibility, saying, "We sold you this, now it's yours. It ain't ours, it's yours, you know, to maintain or do whatever you need to do."
Grantor,
That's the developer in that instance, it says.
developer, for and in consideration of Clark Waters taking over and assuming full rights of ownership, maintenance, pipelines, pump stations, appurtenances, valve controls, sewage works. So this, and a portion of its sewer collection system.
It sounds like the district or whatever is taking over the system in that instance. It's basically a transfer of responsibility and
Okay, you're
ownership.
right. So, and this isn't even re this isn't referring to private on-site infrastructure. This
Right.
is, say, someone builds a neighborhood and puts in step infrastructure and dedicates right of way. Then it's appropriate for them to give it to you guys to maintain.
Yeah, that would be ours, the stuff in the street and all that stuff. That's ours.
That, so that. That's an interesting
That'd
thing
be a
to
good
think
Dave
about.
Pilling question.
Huh?
That'd be a great Dave Pilling question.
Yeah, would be. How they handle that?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe I'll reach out. I this kind of plays into the next chapter, which we can maybe get into. I think we're ready to move there. Around annexation and growth.
Well, I don't think we got enough time to get that conversation going.
Well, the
Sorry.
point of this work session was actually just an intro to this, so we don't have
Okay.
to spend much more time on it. But what I was getting at in with respect to the bill of sale idea, and this is just an idea, so please review this and think about it and comment, and you can do track changes with this document. You have a lot of comments or suggested rewording, but this is the idea. So in some cases, the property owner or developer may propose to construct a sewer main extension on behalf of the district. Any such extension must be designed, installed, tested, and expect, to the standards before being placed into service. Subject to later policy development, the district may allow all or a portion of the eligible cost of the developer constructed extension to be applied as a credit against sewer system development charges otherwise due for the development. Any such credit would be limited to the portion of work that is required by the district, constructed to district standards, accepted by the district, and provides capacity or benefit beyond the immediate needs of the constructing property.
Right. If the developer agrees to install something that is above and beyond their needs, they're getting basically a reimbursement for it, is what it kind of sounds like. Via credits on their system development charges.
Well, phase A, Ryan, will phase A system development charges completely pay for the work that we're doing?
No way. No way.
Well, so we can't credit the system development charges to anybody because it isn't paid for yet. I mean, if they put in 100 feet of pipe or 200 feet of pipe, they're still going to have to pay system development charges because they're hooking up to the rest of the system, which isn't paid for yet.
Yeah, it will be over time.
Well, system development charges is to offset the cost of the whatever it is, $5 or $6 or $7 million we've put out, right? That's
Over the ultimate customer base, which is over 1,000, but upfront only 160.
right. So people that we can't credit system development charges or we'll never get paid back for our initial investment.
Well, this is for a part that we're not building anyway, though,
Right.
right? So
This
this is
is
like,
for
this wouldn't
something.
be like they're
Right.
going to build down A Avenue. It's more like they're going to build down, I don't know,
Central
whatever
or
avenue we're not
19
building on.
or yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they're going to connect to our existing, which hasn't been paid off yet. So
Yeah.
we need to get reimbursed for everything the district has spent. I mean, we could give I don't know. When I read through this earlier, I'm like, this is going to be really sticky when we start to do extensions and who pays for it. And how I'm not sure how that works. You know, it's like if you Tim's familiar with that. You know, if you do a development, say in City of Redmond, you pay for it. Plus, you pay SDCs. That's the way it works because that's the only way it can work.
Well, actually, some communities have what's called a reimbursement district, and they may not actually get paid for 20 years, but there is a mechanism for them to
Right,
get paid
that's
back.
you have to do a local improvement district, an LID, to
Not
do that.
necessarily. Do you?
What's that?
You have
We're
to
down.
create it.
Was David going to be one of our speakers?
I haven't reached out to him yet, but would you like me
Oh, okay.
to?
I mean, he's going to have a idea how the city of Redmond responds, and I think
Yeah.
if we echo or mirror what the city of Redmond does, I think that's going to be our safest position.
I agree with that. You
Yep.
know, could say, well, where did you come up with that? And you go, well, that's the city of Redmond. That's
That's a
great.
standard in the area, basically.
I bring this one up to juxtapose with in light of that bill of sale concept, because maybe they found that it was simpler to just pay them for the value of the improvements, because that's money that the district doesn't have to pay a contractor to go do it, right? So it's like they're extending the system on behalf of the district. You're buying it from them for what it's worth, and also charging them SCC fees instead of intermingling them, because there may be a situation also where they extend way more than even what the SDCs that are due for their development, or they extend the line prior to customers or individual homes actually being built and connecting to it. And that's when SDCs would actually be triggered. So maybe that's why they did the bill of sale thing and kept the development of public infrastructure by private contractor, PIPC, some cities call it. Private infrastructure by private contractor, covering that, buying that at cost and charging SDCs to, the homeowners when they build their home in the subdivision,
But if
for
we
example.
could buy it at cost, wouldn't we just build it? Because it wouldn't be the same cost to us.
Not necessarily. They're subject to different rules for procurement.
Yeah, developers can operate cheaper than a municipality typically.
Municipality.
So, I mean, it's one way to get that done, but it's also like, will the district have the money to pay them for their project? I don't know.
Well, again, yeah, that's in the bill of sale, there's that concern, but in the one you're highlighting there is it's a SDC reimbursement, which we don't necessarily have the money for, but it's not cash out of our pocket, it's just not cash into our pocket, basically.
Yeah, so the question is, what does Redmond do?
Well, there's more here. I did put in a kind of extension framework. The basic idea is If the district is going to extend mains, the minimum criteria is that the mainline extension should have the potential to serve at least one EDU per 50 linear feet at extension of extension at full build out. So that's two Hillman lots, right? And a home could be on that. That's the idea. Or if you go down a block, there are currently bundles of four on many streets. So there's four on one side, four on the other. The lots are they're like 400 feet long. And so the idea
So this is your kind of concept as to how we decide which people are, if they're going to do an extension, what they need to do, how much they need to do.
Yeah, so there's kind of minimum criteria in terms of potential EDUs that would be served by it. So this is potential. This is just based on the dwellings that are along that line that exist there or that could be built there if it's vacant. And then second, the district should generally expect sewer service applications or commitments representing at least one EDU per 100 feet, so half that. So basically, 50, at least 50%. So the baseline potential ultimately is here, and half of those have to be ready to connect, is what that shakes out to. That way, it kind of gives the district a rule of thumb to operate with when deciding, yes, we're going to extend here, but we're not going to extend there. Because some people might get their feelings hurt if you don't extend to them, or if if you decide to, like it just kind of gives a basis for that extension.
That
And
was for our criteria if we extend, right? Not developers' criteria if they want to extend something.
interesting that might also apply to that, because if you're going to pay for it, you'd want it to be economically viable and have connections near term. You're still investing in it.
Well, but if somebody was at the end of a line and they only had a 25-foot lot, but they wanted service, what happens then?
I think the answer is no, and you could say it does it meet this criteria?
But
No.
is,
Wait, what do you
that may
mean?
be the answer, but I'm not sure. I think that's the right answer.
If there's one home at the end of the block,
Sure.
is that what you're saying? Like, say we've got sewer here, and this person wants to be served, but it's down here.
Okay, but what if it's right at the south property line of that development, that
Oh.
where it says TER?
Oh. This one?
So if it's
Sorry.
at his north property line, all right, you got to stop moving or I can't do it. Okay, if it's at his south property line
Okay.
and he wants service, can he connect, first of all?
Well, if it's hundreds of feet away.
Well, no, it's not. It's right at his south property line. It's
Oh,
right there.
yeah.
He can connect.
If it's right at this south property line,
Yeah.
I would think it would be possible.
Well, it's possible, yes,
Jog
but is it
in.
appropriate? How about the tax lot just to the north of him then?
You mean versus getting in the street and doing a 10-foot or 100-foot
Right.
extension through?
Yep.
Yeah. That's a separate question, but I think that's a good one. For an adjacent extension from an adjacent main line, so they're not
Right.
crowding in, and running diagonal or parallel to the right of way
Right.
to get
And there,
in on
I
it.
remember Bend had some criteria about that, and I don't remember it well enough to recite it, but I know that's been thought through by people smarter than us.
That you have to extend it past your like through your property frontage. That
Well,
is the
like,
standard.
yeah, the to and through is kind of a
Yeah.
standard thing, or it used to be back in the day.
I think that's a great point. And if yeah, that kind of relates to this. This is, I guess, more in the thought of like, should we go down a couple hundred feet or not?
Yeah.
But that immediate scenario should be addressed as well.
Well, if they adopt that standard that says, and I don't know whose standard it is, but it's that if sewers within 300 feet, then you must hook up, rather than, if your septic fails, then who runs that 300 feet?
There's some new rules on all that. Still trying to wrap my mind around it. Hope
Yeah.
there's a little more clarity on it.
Well, so if a guy, say they're 50-foot lots and they're s six lots away, and their septic fails, and Todd Cleveland says, "Well, you're within 300 feet, and the standard says you have to hook up," then we have to be able to answer that question: who pays for that? I mean, and there again, that has probably already been decided by Bend and Redmond and whoever.
Yeah. There's a lot more on that, and Todd confirmed he can meet with us in October when we go through the regulatory compliance section. We can also continue to coordinate before then to get to the bottom of it. But there was a that form he showed me that was interesting. Again, we're a little early on this, but in the context of extensions. We can take a look at that. Do you guys need to go? I know it's getting.
Yeah, well, it's that money component of it is to be we don't have a lot of money to extend stuff, so how's the work going to get done?
Yeah. It's a good point. We'll look into the sewer or the Redmond standards. So this is the new form that people will have to fill out if they need if their system's failing and say they want to do a repair or they're adding a bedroom alteration permit, then this form will go from Todd or from the county to the district to confirm the physical availability and the legal availability of sewer to that property. You guys will start to see this these forms come
Yeah.
in. Physically available, yes. Legally, no. Yes or no. And then, so all these details. But the definition, the new definitions for physical availability is for repair alteration permit up to 899 GPD, which is basically like a duplex, 200 feet. For so there's a little what is that? That is making it a lower threshold to be required
For a repair, yeah, for a new
for
construction.
repair or alteration. If it's new construction up to a duplex, it's 300 feet. If it's a proposed subdivision or group of 2 to 5 single family dwellings, 200 feet times the number of equivalent dwelling units. So I guess if it's 5, then it's
1,000.
it's 1,000. Yeah.
But they can't do over
Scales.
1,000.
So it scales to the single family home, I guess.
Right.
So there's a little more clarity there. It's not just 300, but so that might loop more people into needing to connect. And but also, but wait, that actually makes it if you're 201 feet, you previously had to connect. Now you don't in some cases. So that I guess one effect is this eases the burden on people that are 205 feet from sewer.
On a proposed subdivision, for it's 200 feet times the number of units, so it could be 1,000 feet away. But
Yes.
okay, you connect if you're 1,000 feet away. I understand. I get it. Never mind. I was going backwards in my head.
So it expands the threshold to
Yep.
bring them into sewer, their building. So I think the good news there, which is it's interesting because previously it might have just been it'd been 300. But now if you're building something at a greater scale, the idea is you have you can extend the length that we were expecting single family homes to do times the number of single family homes you're building. So that means any new subdivision in Terrebonne is probably going to be within that range.
Well, and my
Probably.
guess is when they rewrite that comprehensive code, they're going to have a size limitation on the lots, but they're going to require you to hook up to sewer because they're, on the
Yeah.
small. Well, I mean, those even a 50 by 100 lot isn't big enough to get a septic reserve and a house.
Yeah, certain developments, with this, at a certain lot size will require sewer.
What we have to think about is, how do these extensions get paid for?
Yeah.
So if your system fails at 200 feet away, like if you were a developer and you wanted to develop 200 feet away, we would reimburse the developer for the sewer line, but we don't reimburse it. Well, I thought we were just talking about that. If it was not a failed one, like let's say you're putting in a new development and they have to put in 200 feet of line because you're 200 feet away. What?
Two and through. You got to bring the
Two and
sewer
three.
to you and through the end of your
Okay,
property.
and then through it. So they would have to do it through the whole development. But
Yes.
if you're a house that just fails and you would individually have to bring that line to your house from 200 feet away, and
All
then you're
right,
stuck
sounds like
with
that,
paying
yeah.
it, or does the district still pay for that also?
I think the homeowner's paying for that. I don't understand why it would be different if it were the developer or the homeowner.
Yeah, that's an interesting point.
No, because the developer were saying we would have to reimburse them. I mean, that's what we were
No,
talking about. Like,
don't have to.
you don't
This
have
just
to.
says
No.
you could.
You
This is
could. Okay.
you
Well, it
could.
seems like
Subject
I
to
can't
fault.
see reimbursing a developer and not reimbursing a homeowner. That just seems a little.
Yeah.
Two
No,
and three
I
thing
agree with
typically
that.
is. We're going to have to be consistent with new construction, old construction. It just, we have to, if we're going to say we're going to pay for it, we have to figure out where the money comes from. I mean, we don't have any money.
I don't think we're saying we're going to pay for things at this point, at least not what I've been hearing. The to and through thing is that if you're a developer, you want to build five lots, you have to bring the sewer to your property and then to the end of your property so the next guy or girl on the development can do the same. And that's not reimbursed in any fashion. Is the way it's historically been done. I'm not sure that's still current world order, but I believe it is.
That's a great point. That here. Where would the money come from for these extensions?
Well, right. And so I can see some complaints where they're like, well, if you're in phase A, you didn't have to pay for this, but I have to pay for it because I'm out of phase A.
Well,
And that's the way it goes, I guess.
we could ask for more grant money. I mean, that's another option.
Well,
I mean, those are
and
things, you know.
I
Somebody
think you
else can
still
ask for more
have,
grant money.
right. And I think you guys can, it's not like you've got to make this decision today. And if somebody comes your way and says, hey, I can bring you 100 units if you can work out a deal here for me, then you can decide what to do. But I think as a general principle, you're not going to just pay for it and without, well, you can't pay for it if you don't have money. But there are communities that actually reimburse when somebody comes in and says, okay, I'm going to go ahead and come in. It's already been paid for by this property owner. And it may be 15, 20 years before they get paid back.
Well, they accrue interest too.
They accrue interest, and usually entities use a revenue bond to do those sorts of things. But we're all early on right now, but I think generally, if you don't have money, you can't build, or you got to build it yourself. But I think there will probably over the course of time be instances where you get creative on finance to make it happen.
Yeah.
Certainly may happen. We're certainly not trying to be deal workers sort of thing, but we also want to make things happen. So there's a reality of things.
So this just gives you a framework to make some sort of deal like that. It doesn't require the district to credit or
Yeah, the
purchase.
first sentence is pretty appropriate in some cases,
Yeah.
not all cases.
Well, I'm kind of thinking about this in a couple different ways, right? And Kristen, maybe you can help me with this. We've gotten some grant money, which we don't have to pay back, to help service the Terrebonne area. I'm correct in that, right, Kristen?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, we've gotten quite a bit of grant money.
Well, right. So, really, the system development charges are going to go to pay back the money that we have to pay back. Is that right or wrong?
Correct.
It's
Right. So, if we look at it from that perspective, the number's quite a bit less, right? And so, if we said, okay, the system, then perhaps maybe the system development charges in phase A actually pay back everything that we borrowed. And don't, you see, it's a different number, right? Quite a bit less number.
Than if we'd taken out a full loan for all of it, you mean?
Well, yeah, and kind of the way the grant money was not just for phase A, but it was for the whole Terrebonne district. Right. I mean,
Technically, the grant money was for construction of phase A. But the SDCs are for the whole thing, right, Ryan?
Well, right.
Kind
So
of.
if the SDCs offset the cost of putting the main line in, then that makes it kind of, and then, I don't know if I'm making myself clear.
If
There
you're
is
done talking, you're not.
what's that?
And if you've completed your sentence, you're not making yourself clear to me.
Okay, well, the overall grant, like phase A, B, C, are all going to use that main line from approximately where the water district is to the treatment plant, correct?
Yep.
Well, let's just pretend that the grant money that we received, that we don't paid for that portion of it. Okay?
Okay.
And so then the SDCs we get to pay back what we did will then should come a lot closer to paying back phase A. Does that make it any more clear?
So the SDCs are calculated based on our latest estimate. It's the cost of the current system plus system expansions. We have a figure in there for a couple million. So you add that up. You divide it by the full customer base. So SDCs aren't variable based on how much of the infrastructure you're participating in or not. Like your place in the system, we don't count lineal feet that you're, benefiting from. And also, so it is kind of like it's one big average. All the infrastructure, past and future, or now and later, divided
Well,
by
right, but the people in
all exactly.
phase B shouldn't really have to pay any more for them than people in phase A.
Maybe just adjustment for inflation, but yeah, it should be the same. That's
Right,
a good
because
question.
the grant money came from the public, which did pay for the majority of
Okay.
this.
I think I see what you're getting at. That offsets the total number in the numerator for SDCs. So
Right.
you have a reimbursement component, which is the upfront work that we'll do upfront. There's the improvement part of the fee, and then so you add those together and then subtract grant funding that goes towards that. So it's basically the net infrastructure cost, present and future, divided by all the customers that that infrastructure will support.
Which is why it's lower now than it was when we were taking out the full amount.
Right. Yep. The grant funding affects it quite a bit in that sense. Also, the SDCs, the idea is that it is to cover past and future infrastructure, but that doesn't mean it has to be applied to loan payback. District has the flexibility to use those funds in different ways. So you could be stacking up SDCs that build up into a capital reserve that builds up to hundreds of thousands of dollars, and then you can pay developers for mainline extensions.
Okay, well, that's another way where you'd get money. You'd take the SDCs and put them into a fund, and then your charge for usage pays back the loan.
Yeah, exactly. It's an operating expense.
Right.
And it
So,
like
yeah,
operating
well,
revenues of rates.
that would be a way to get the money. I'm just trying to figure out
Yeah.
how to make this kind of fair, right?
Yeah,
Because if I was in B, I would look at the people in A and say, well, I didn't get that option, and they didn't have to pay for that sewer. And I'm paying the same SDC, but now I have, and I think it's important that we're fair.
Henry. I think it's important that we be timely as well. So I think we ought to call this meeting because we're getting way deeper than we're going to be able to resolve. So,
Okay, so we're going to talk about this at our next meeting.
we definitely need to talk about it. Yes, for sure. But
So,
I think it's going to extend our meeting way too long to try and resolve it at the moment.
well,
and
yeah, okay. Well,
can I say one more thing, Guy, before we go? It's like we could also work on getting another grant, just like we did for Phase A. So, I mean, I would expect we would do the same thing that we did for Phase A, for Phase B, for Phase C. If we're doing little small extensions, that's a whole different thing, though.
okay.
Because
And
that's like, okay, what are we going to go ask for a grant for, five houses? That's going to be a little bit different. So,
well, I don't think you're going to get that.
exactly. So I think, I see us like doing the same if we are going to do it in a phased way, but that's the other question. Are we expanding kind of organically by people who want to, or are we going to expand like A, B, C?
So, you've been kind of dealing with these grant people. Is that a question we could ask them? Is there a grant to do that? Or I mean,
I mean, I think we kind of asked for the same things that
it's the
we've been
same
asking
grant, basically.
for. And it's just a different, just a slightly different ask. It's a different area of town. It's a different number of people. It's a different priority.
And one thing you
Okay.
can say is an extension, just rename the project. A lot of it too is we just have to look for grant opportunities. Sometimes the grant people who are working with now, they will suggest them if they had to know about something. So,
Okay, well, so we have some options.
yeah.
Loan is another one. If you don't qualify for grants and you have the debt service capacity, to handle more debt, that's another option.
Well, and we could stack those SDCs. And if we got the grant, we could put that towards the loan. Or,
Yep.
something like that.
Options. Paying for the system, however, it's paying for
Right.
this.
And then some of those loans will just do interest payments for so many years. And then you'll start doing principal. So you have some time.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it sounds like
Great meeting, though. I like this one. I like this.
yeah.
Good.
Well, I think we got it. a lot accomplished, and I think what you're doing is good, Ryan.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate
And
all
I think it was real helpful to have Jonathan,
Yeah.
because he deals with so many things.
Yeah, totally.
So,
I'm glad that worked out.
as the board, do we have any homework besides reading this?
I'm glad you asked. I think
Thank you,
continued reading of
Curtis.
this is great. It's maybe not your first choice for a good bedtime read, but if you have these thoughts of like going on in your head, just look at the section. I would suggest just look at it in Word, and then you can click track changes and then say how you would rewrite it or add a comment so that that helps us track the specific parts of this document, and then we can and then I can work on that. So we can continue this process between now and the next work session because there's a lot of big questions here to resolve. So feel free to keep working on it and send me comments.
Awesome.
Next month, we'll be looking at O&M and Emergency Authority with Keith Bedell from Oahu on June, whatever that is, the third Thursday. And that might help clarify some of those maintenance responsibilities in the breakout.
First Thursday.
You're right, first Thursday. Yep. So what is that then? June. It's not opening up for me. In June.
It's in June, the first Thursday.
First Thursday in June.
It's the fourth.
The fourth.
Yeah. Thanks, Katie.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I think that is it. Oh, I had one thought before we go. There's a lot of things here that maybe just worth putting a survey out to the public. We're working with Tumalo right now, actually, on their PER, and have a list of survey questions prepared for that purpose that may be worth considering because they're dealing with these same questions about, do you want us to provide the maintenance or do you want to do it? Would you prefer to pay a little more and have the district do it, or would you prefer to keep it, deal with stuff on your property? Those types of things might help get a feel for the public's preferences, and that might help kind of craft this DMP accordingly.
Great.
Would you guys want
Can
to
you
see a
get us
copy
a
of
copy
that?
of what? Can you get us a copy of Tomalos?
Yeah.
I want that name.
Yeah.
I want
Yeah, I can.
I think
Cool.
what we're going to find, especially in Terrebonne, where we're so close, is it's really going to come down to what are you charging me?
Yeah, I think that's
Yeah.
ultimately it as well.
Yeah, another question there is, what's the most you could pay? At what point would it become unaffordable? Just to get a sense of stuff. 'Cause I mean, people
$2 a
pay.
month.
Well, sure. But I mean, we could also mention stuff like, okay, the average internet bill is $100 or $80. The average phone bill is 160. So,
Or what are the communities paying around us,
Yeah,
like
and so, yeah, sewers.
Mather's paying
Yes.
X,
I
Redmond's
think we
paying
need to
Y,
justify ours, like
costs.
Kristen was saying, comparables to others. But if
Yeah.
you ask people how much they want to pay, I can tell you I know the answer for
Not
sure.
much. Yeah.
Maybe at this point in the process, it's too late to ask that question. It's going to be what it's going to be,
It's
based
true.
on the project cost and whatnot. And it's shaping up to be good, but that was just one of the questions. I'll send those.
Great.
All right, good work session, everybody. Thank you all for your
Thank you
time.
guys.
Yeah. Thanks all. Have a
Bye.
great
Great work.
day. Great
Thank you,
feedback.
Ryan, for all the work. Have a good
Yeah.
day. Thanks,
Thanks.
guys.